everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, there was the smell of rain when I went down to the lip of the driveway to pick up the Arizona Daily Star.
What does rain smell like, Bill?
Well, it just smelled, as I remarked to my wife, it smells very fresh.
I heard one time that it has something to do with ozone.
Maybe that's it. But it got me, made me feel really good. Maybe it gave me a little energy.
A little bit of a lift.
The ions were all in the right direction for
maybe
the
Buckmaster. Maybe it's ions.
For the Buckmaster Show. It's Thursday, November the 10th, 2022. Still waiting, of course, on the final tally, Tom, right? When do we expect another... We don't know.
Pima County is saying 14th or 15th. Maricopa County is saying we're counting.
Okay.
How come other states are able to get all of their tallies, all their votes counted, even
like Florida,
places like Florida that have a bigger population there?
Well, we'll get an update on Pima County in a moment. Rex Scott is with me, Pima County Supervisor. But first we need to, and gladly, tell everybody, Supervisor Scott, first of all, great to see you.
Great to be here, Bill. Thanks.
We are our naming sponsor for our studio is Green Things, Zocalo Village. We'll talk a little bit more about Green Things and how they're getting ready for the holidays later in the program. Our live line when we do our telephone interviews is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And of course, our podcast, BuckmasterShow.com, pretty much 99.8%, maybe 99.9% of every show we have done since January 2011, when we launched the radio project after 22 years on TV. They're all available for you at BuckmasterShow.com. Supervisor Scott, good to see you.
Good to be in person, Bill.
Yeah.
I've had to call in the last few months.
I always like it when you come in. I always like it when guests come in so I can see the whites of their eyes, right? 2 years ago this week, you were elected as the Pima County Supervisor in the Supervisorial District Number 1, where I live, includes the foothills. And you've got quite a bit of space all the way up to Oro Valley, right? Marana.
Actually, the northern boundary for our district is the Pinal County line.
So is it goes, really?
Yes, it is. So it goes all the way through the village of Catalina. Until you get to the Pinal County line, the new western boundary, because we did redistricting, the new western boundary is Dove Mountain Boulevard. So I only have one precinct in the town of Marana in my district. When I was elected, 45% of the town was in my district. Now it's only one precinct. The rough eastern boundary is Catalina Highway. And the rough southern boundary is River Road, although in redistricting, we picked up about five or six precincts within the city of Tucson. Prior to that, I was the only supervisor who had no Tucson precincts in his district. I have now about five or six of them roughly in the area of Tucson Medical Center.
Oh, didn't know that. I know you. They were talking about redistricting, and that's done now, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so 2 years, 2 years ago you became, and this is really, your election was of historic interest because you are the first Democrat to hold that District 1 seat in about 50 years.
That's correct. Ron Asta was elected in 1972, but then he lost the seat in 1976. And it had been a Republican seat from 1976 until 2020.
Yeah. And then Ann Day, was she after Asta?
No, I believe Katie Dusenberry was after Mr. Asta.
Okay, because when I came to town the second time after going to school here at the U of A, came back in 88, that was Ann Day representing District 1. So how did we do with these vote centers? What are you hearing? You guys have been kind of reconstructing and deconstructing how it went Tuesday. What's the overview?
Bill, what I'm hearing is exactly what I expected to hear from our elections department, which is that they took into account some of the areas for improvement that they saw after the August primaries and put a lot more emphasis on staff training. communication between the elections division and the individual vote centers, instructions on how to not only get the vote centers set up, but how to break them down. And so we had a very smooth operation. There were a couple of technical glitches that were fixed very quickly. It's important for the people in Pima County to know that we do not do tabulation on site at the vote centers like is done in Maricopa County. All of the votes are tabulated at our central tabulation site. But the everything that we're hearing is that things went very well for people who chose to vote in person on Tuesday.
And how many votes approximately ballots are outstanding? About 100,000? Is that
there what might be a little bit more than that, Bill? And these are not only mail-in ballots that came in after Saturday.
Okay.
They're also mail-in ballots that were dropped off at vote centers. Mm-hmm. And then there's, I think, right around 1,300 provisional ballots as well.
So they're not necessarily people who voted Election Day.
No, those votes have been counted and okay. posted from what I understand.
Yeah, because that's a really important point, because especially with this state races so close.
Yes.
People like to say, well, Republicans generally have been voting day of, and Democrats mailing in their ballot. I don't know how much truth there is to that.
Well, the majority of voters, regardless of party, vote by mail.
Sure.
There's been an increasing number of Republican voters in the last two cycles, 2020 and 2022, who choose to vote in person. But the majority of voters in Arizona and in Pima County, regardless of party, vote by mail.
And you're watching very carefully, as all of us are, the top of the ticket state government, because you, as an elected official on the five-member Pima County Board of Supervisors, which is a majority Democratic board, it's a 4-1 majority with the Democrats, who wins up in Phoenix is important to Pima County.
It's very important to Pima County, whoever sits in the governor's chair. And it's important to point out that whoever is the ultimate victor of this race, whether it be Secretary Hobbs or Ms. Lake, they are going to be a governor who won a very narrow victory. And that's not something we've seen. Governor Ducey, both times that he ran, won pretty substantial victories. The other thing that's important to point out is that there is going to be a very closely divided legislature. The Democrats did much better than we hoped going into the election in both the state Senate and the state House. So you're going to have a governor who wins a very closely contested election, dealing with a legislature that is going to be pretty closely divided between the two parties. And that speaks to the fact that this really is a purple state in terms of the choices that voters are making. But what all voters want is for government at all levels to work earnestly on their behalf. And so what I am hopeful for, regardless of who wins the governor's race, regardless of who wins the legislative races, is that we're all focused on putting our shoulders to the wheel and getting to work on behalf of the public.
Just got an email from Beth Borazon, who does a great job for Supervisor Steve Christie, your colleague on the board. Beth just informed me 159,000 ballots still to be counted. Thanks for that update, Beth. So generally, there was a lot of concern going in here because we had a new elections director, a new Pima County recorder, concerns about the way the election would be handled. But generally, from what I'm hearing, you're giving it high marks.
I couldn't be more satisfied with the performance of our elections division. And it's important to point out for the public that, yes, the elections director, Ms. Hargrove, is new to Pima County, but she came to us from a very highly populated county in Virginia, where she did a lot of excellent work, and they had vote centers and e-poll books in Virginia. So she comes to us with a tremendous amount of experience, and we have seen how she has used that experience and her quick recognition of the needs here in Pima County to really serve the public well.
All right. After the break, we'll talk, get an update on the latest with the RTA Next program. There was a very important meeting last week about the RTA. We'll get an update on that. But right now, Supervisor, I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery.
In District 1.
Yes, in District 1. And Thanksgiving has crept up on us very close, 2 weeks from today. So they're very busy, as you can imagine, up at Mona's Danish Bakery. They're busy taking orders for what type of pie would you like? How about dinner rolls? So let's get your take on dessert on the Thanksgiving table, Rex Scott.
Bill, I am a big fan of either blueberry or cherry pies.
Really?
Yes. Not a big pumpkin pie guy. I'll have a sliver, but when it comes to pie, give me blueberry or give me cherry.
And I've been asking that question of guests now for at least a week, and Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass can attest to this. We've had some cream pies creeping into the mix. In fact, Tom loves a chocolate cream pie.
That's a contender for me as
yeah,
well.
That,
absolutely.
That if it's done right, he likes the chocolate. So, yeah, we had someone, who was it yesterday on the show? Maybe it was Tim Stellar, the star, talking about a cream pie. Coconut cream. Oh, huh? Banana? No, get on the mic there, Tom. What?
Tim mentioned pumpkin, pecan pie that he liked.
Thank you. That's right. Tim was not a cream pie guy. He went with pecan pie. That's always great, too. Anyway, we could spend the rest of the show talking about Thanksgiving desserts, but there's more to talk about with Rex Scott. And by the way, it's Mona's Danish Bakery. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. You can call them. You can order your pies and your dinner rolls on the website or the next time you're there, just stop in, ask for Steve or any of the team. They will take care of it. We'll take a break right here. More with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. Tomorrow is our Friday Focus interview. It will be with the newly reelected Congressman Raul Grijalva, representing the 7th Congressional District of Arizona. And as I recall, this would be his 10th election. Steve, 2002? Yeah, 10 times he has been elected. Anyway, Kurt Prendergast of the Arizona Daily Star, who is breathing such a sigh of relief. He's the opinion page editor. He's so glad, Rex Scott, that the election is over. I mean, there was so much input that Kurt had this time with letters to the editor. Some days he had to do two full pages, which is good that there's that kind of community engagement. People wanted to have their voices be heard. All right, we have the RTA Next program, the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year program will be sunsetting in 2026, which isn't that really that far away. We're going to be turning the page on a new year here, soon to be 2023. So it's getting close, Rex Scott. We had Councilman Kasacek on the show yesterday, and he was talking about amid the short funding shortfalls, two RTA projects are being delayed. Let's see, the Houghton Road from Broadway to Tancredi Road and 22nd from I-10 to Keno Parkway. And Councilman Kasacek said at this point, he is not on board with RTA Next. Not that that's a permanent thing, but at this particular point, you represent Pima County on the RTA governing board. 9 members?
That's correct.
9 members. There was your meeting was last week.
Last Thursday, yes, sir.
What was the takeaway on that?
Well, one of the things that we did was that we unanimously affirmed what the city had discussed at the mayor and council meeting 2 days prior to our meeting, which was that we were going to recommend that those two projects that you just mentioned be moved to RTA Next, along with two other projects that we had already unanimously voted to move to RTA Next. And those were the joint project between the county and Marana on Silverbell Road from El Camino del Cerro to Ina, and then the county's First Avenue project, not the city's, the county's First Avenue project between Orange Grove and Ina. So the combination of all those projects being moved to RTA Next will help us to get very close to dealing with the $150 million revenue shortfall that we're looking at. But it's important for the public to know that those projects will be front-loaded, meaning that they will be in the first batch of projects that will be addressed if RTA Next is passed by the voters. If RTA Next is not passed by the voters, then those four projects and all of the other projects within the current RTA will be completed. The entire RTA board is committed to using all local and non-local funds at our disposal to make sure that all of those projects are completed, which was the commitment that we made to the voters in 2006.
Mm-hmm. So everything will get done that was
There is no question about the original manifest.
Yes. It's all going to get done.
It will. That is the commitment of the full board.
So how's the feeling on the board right now?
Well, Bill, I've been serving on the RTA board and the Pima Association of Governments Regional Council for almost 2 years because I was appointed right after I was elected to be the county's representative. And this last meeting was another example of how we came into the meeting as nine people, not entirely sure how we would get to the point of agreement, but we reached it. And just like in our previous several meetings, we not only got to a point where we achieved consensus, we got to a point where we achieved unanimity. Mm. And I think that's because all of us are committed to fully realizing the completion of the current plan, as we committed to the voters, and are also fully committed to getting a viable and practical RTA Next plan in front of the voters so that it can hopefully be approved and be ready to cover the period from 2026 to 2046.
When will we know what's on the program?
Well, we should be getting a draft from the Citizens Advisory Committee probably midpoint of 2023. Mm-hmm. And then we will be making, as is our charge, any changes that we feel that we need to make before we put it out to the public for their review and all of the input that we want during that public review process. And then we'll put a final plan before the voters at an election date that has yet to be determined.
The vetting process for the current program went on for a while, and a lot of people weighed in on that, Rex Scott.
And I'm sure that'll be the case with this one as well, and that's what we want. You want as many eyes as possible on the plan and sharing their feedback with us so that we can make any necessary revisions before we put it before the voters. That having that kind of fulsome public review and input process is absolutely essential.
Let's see if we can move on quickly here to the constable situation.
Sure.
Pima County Administrator Jan Lesher was my guest Friday. And Jan has recommended that you and your colleagues on the board cut the pay of constables in the coming years if the office, which is collectively run by the independently elected constables, doesn't enact a series of changes.
And it's important to note that we can only make that change to a constable's salary in an election year. You can't do it to them midterm. Hmm. And what we are saying is that it's important that there be increased consolidation and collaboration between the elected constables so that the public can count on that kind of consistent collaborative service regardless of which area of the county that they live in. There really has been a great deal of difference and distinction between how the various constables carry out their duties. And there needs to be, as I've said, a greater degree of collaboration and consolidation between all of them so that the public can expect that same level of service regardless of where they live, and so that they can work with each other, not only to help each other to stay safe, but help each other to get all of the documents delivered, which is their charge under Arizona statute.
I believe Ms. Lesher shared with us there was talk of a Pima County deputy being assisting on some of these that can be highly volatile, some of these delivering notices of eviction. Come on, I mean, that's a very dangerous situation.
That's one of the other items on our agenda, Bill, is having a position of deputy constable, and then we will work with the constables to determine how many of those positions need to be filled. And we're also following up on another recommendation, which is to purchase body cameras for the constables, similar to the body cameras that the sheriff's deputies already use.
And there are some openings. The constables are understaffed due to some resignations in the wake of the murder of Constable Deborah Martinez. So, folks, it's a dangerous job.
It is, and we'll be filling one of those appointments on Tuesday. The appointment in Precinct 10 that was brought about by the resignation of Constable Stevenson.
Yeah, there isn't really a lot of uniformity in how the approach is taken to the particular. I mean, and these are independently elected people, so you know they all wear kind of different outfits or whatever. There's no like particular uniform for a constable.
There needs to be more consistency, consolidation in terms of practice, with regard to how they carry out their daily duties. And we are in some cases constrained by the fact that not only are they independently elected officials, but their duties are outlined in Arizona statutes. So any really significant change to what constables do would have to be something that we take up with the legislature.
All right, coming up next, Dr. Robert Hendricks, your old friend from Flowing Wells.
Absolutely. Dr. Hendricks was the superintendent in Flowing Wells when I moved here from Ohio in 1991, and it's always a joy to see him.
He looks so good. I mean, he's just so active. This guy, Dr. Hendricks, he's out there about in the community and doing so many great things, not only he works very hard with the Interfaith Council, too, so does a lot of good things. We'll talk to Dr. Hendricks coming up next. I want to wish you and your family a joyous Thanksgiving, Rex Scott. Hope it goes very well for
the
family.
Thank you, Bill. The same to you and Ann.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back with Dr. Robert Hendricks.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is Thanksgiving, just 2 weeks away from today. Green Things, getting ready for the holidays. They grew over the off season, the non-holiday season. They start growing these poinsettias in January. But this year, 20,000, and they will be distributed and sold, and I doubt if there'll be many left by New Year's Eve. But anyway, go buy Green Things, 3384 East River Road, by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site, also home to Zocalo Village. And if you're looking for a different kind of Christmas tree, how about one of these punched tin Christmas trees that they have at Zocalo Village from Mexico? Very interesting. Put some lighting underneath the punched tree, punched tin tree, and you have a very interesting look for your holidays. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Our contributor on education. Once a month, we are honored to have Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education, with us, former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, one time Arizona Top School Superintendent of the Year, Vice Chair of the Interfaith Community Services. Dr. Hendricks, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill, and yourself?
Doing real well. Thank you for asking. We're all waiting to see how the election is going to go, at least at the top of the ticket. We know about our school boards. Let's talk a little bit about school board elections. It seems like, you know, it's supposed to be nonpartisan, but partisan politics have surely, over the last couple of years, crept in and have become center stage.
Well, Bill, historically, school boards have not run with any kind of party affiliation. Every school board member has run essentially as an independent, with the affiliation being to work in a community that they must live in, mm-hmm. and help the cause of public education.
It's a non-paying position.
In Arizona, it's non-paid. In some states, that is not the case.
Ooh,
but
didn't know that.
In Arizona, there is no pay. Occasionally, a fruitcake at Christmas, but nothing beyond that. Now, there are affiliations, party affiliations in some states. In Pennsylvania and Alabama, Louisiana, they've had party affiliations for quite a while. And there are other states that are urging the legislature to change that. But Arizona at this point has that non-affiliation status. And what we've noticed is that the GOP, the Republican Party, has really pushed for some kind of affiliation, if not by party name, definitely by pedagogy and opinions. Hmm. And we've seen that in Arizona. I think a lot of this has been prompted by, you know, the pandemic restrictions that we experienced. And, you know, there are folks that have been running on the idea that remote learning and mask requirements and back to the basics, you know, are things that we really should be looking at more carefully as a school board. And there's also this issue of back to the basics, which we hear constantly. Let's get rid of some of the frills. Frills, I'm not sure what they mean. In some cases, people believe that frills are the co-curricular activities like band and orchestra and art and drama, that those things really occupy too much of the time, and athletics, which are costly. And so
and
no frills education.
Don't forget about this so-called critical race theory.
Well, critical race theory is definitely front and center, although it remains fairly elusive, you know, in Arizona schools. Hmm. It may be a major issue elsewhere, but I have yet to find critics, you know, of CRT find examples in Arizona schools where it's actually being taught. Now, university, which of course is the world of academia, which I spent some time with, that would be the case, that CRT is widely discussed. Mm-hmm. And it's a reality, I think, in the university community. But in terms of the elementary and secondary schools, public schools, I don't see really a lot of prevalence, you know, in that area. But, you know, it could be elsewhere. But there have been political action groups that have been really, really active in trying to elect a slate of candidates. Mm-hmm. And there's two particular groups, two national groups. One's called the Moms for Liberty. Mm. And the other one's called the 1976 Project. Mm. And thousands and thousands of dollars have been poured into the these PAC groups, political action groups, to try to elect their slate of candidates. The school boards are really kind of an interesting anomaly, in my opinion. I believe it's one of school boards are one of the last vestiges of local school governance. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a place where you really get to know your candidates, because in most school boards, they're your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
They meet on a very regular basis. In most cases in the state of Arizona, they meet every 2 weeks. So you have high accessibility to school boards, the school candidates, and what school board's business is. And typically in Arizona, it's five members. However, there are some exceptions to that. If it's a very small district, it could be a three-board member.
I think like Sahorita.
Yes.
Yeah, three-board.
And also, there's one school district in the state of Arizona that has seven members.
What?
Yes. That's the Phoenix Union School District. And actually, in that model, the school board member represents a particular area of the district.
Oh.
Whereas in other school boards in the state, the school board members represent the community at large.
Yeah. Let me ask you, so is that a law in Arizona that they have to be nonpartisan? What would it take then to change to make a school board a partisan?
It would take an act of the legislature.
I see.
Yeah, it couldn't be an independent decision on a school board itself. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. still, as many things that school boards do, mm-hmm. it's governed by legislative action, by state law.
I mean, we may see that.
We may see that.
Out of the legislature.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting to me is I heard candidates, you know, over the past few months talk about what they would do if they were to be elected.
Yes.
The reality is that they don't have as much independence and freedom to do those things as they think they do.
Uh-huh.
A lot of things are regulated by mm-hmm. state regulation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And while there is some latitude on local school board level, it's not as much as one would think. You know, it's interesting. I took a look at our local races.
Yes.
And we had two particularly contentious board races, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
One was in Catalina Foothills,
uh-huh.
and the other one was in Amphitheater School District. Mm-hmm. And the candidates essentially teamed up as alliances. And in Catalina Foothills, there were six candidates.
Uh-huh.
Three of them represented, I don't want to call it the status quo, but they were very happy with the way the district is being operated. They believe that it was a district of high excellence, you know, high achieving. The State Department of Education just gave all of its schools a letter grade of A.
Uh-huh.
And then the other three candidates, again, an alliance, said, no, they're not doing as good a job as they should. There are flaws in the system, and we need to get back to more basics.
How did the dissident faction do?
They didn't win.
Okay.
They didn't win. The block of three,
yes,
that, you know, are very pleased with the district were the winners.
Hmm.
And another interesting thing about it is that in open enrollment, where students can attend a school district without actually residing in the school district, those folks don't get the vote in the election. So, in other words, your child can be attending the school. you make a decision whether you're satisfied with that school or not, and your vote is with your feet.
Yeah.
And in Catalina Foothills, about 50% of the students attending that school district do not live in the district.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's increased significantly.
Okay.
So I know we have to take a little bit of a break, and I've got much more to say.
I know you do. We do need to talk about the Arizona schools facing massive budget cuts.
Yes.
I want to talk about that after the break.
All right.
And I wonder, and I'm sure you'll tell us, why are they facing massive budget cuts? So hold your thoughts there, Robert Hendricks. We'll take a break right here. It's the Buckmaster Show on a Thursday in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. If you're looking for a great getaway, how about a trip over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico? Only about a three-hour drive. Lots to do over there. Mid-50s right now in Silver City. That's great weather to get out and do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Check out everything to do and where to stay, where to eat. Great places to eat as well. southwestnewmexico.org for more information. And again, it's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. We send so many of our listeners over there, and everybody says the same thing. Had a great time. Dr. Robert Hendricks with us, our education contributor. You mentioned the Catalina School Board election. You had also referenced AmFi. There was also, I take it, a slate of kind of, we'll call it a dissident kind of slate of candidates.
Four candidates, two and two.
Yeah.
And the incumbents and those who represented liking things the way they're going, you know, were successful. And of course, all these results are kind of pending final official confirmation, but
status
you know, in
quo,
this case,
status quo, then one
yeah,
out,
yeah,
one out
yeah.
in those districts. Arizona schools facing massive budget cuts. Why?
We have been here before.
yeah.
We talk about this every year, and it's difficult to explain, and it's even more difficult to understand. But the legislature has a spending cap. The spending cap was really established in 1979-80, using dollars at that time. And essentially, even though districts are holding the money in their accounts, they can't spend it unless this archaic spending cap gets lifted. It has to be lifted by March 1st.
Mm.
The legislature leadership has not responded to the idea that they want to move quickly on this agenda item.
Weren't we talking about this during the last legislative session?
Yeah, same thing.
And they kicked the can down the road.
They kicked the can. They waited to the last minute, but they did do it in the 11th hour. But if you're a school district looking at meeting your obligations for the year that you've
mm-hmm.
already set,
mm-hmm.
If it's not done by March 1st, you're going to have to make some immediate cuts. 16% or more, what they're saying.
Well, and knowing the way the legislature works, by the time they kind of gather in January, they get to know each other in February. And if you're looking at something like in March, that's kind of early for the legislature to make any decision. At least that's been my experience observing lawmakers.
Well, Bill, I think it's all about leadership. The leadership knows exactly what they're doing by stalling. Even if you have newer members of the legislature or those who you know, are getting settled in, the leadership can move this thing forward. I think part of this, excuse me, is that there's still this contentious issue about Prop 208.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even though it's been fairly settled, it's not totally settled, and there still could be some court rulings that could change this. I feel, and I think I'm right that you know some of this inaction might be punitive, and that districts are to be made to suffer as long as they have to. Hopefully, you know it will turn around, but right now it's sort of in limbo.
All right, I want to move on. So that deadline is going to be coming. Go ahead, take some water there, Bob. Mesa schools are adopting a different approach to teaching. What's going on up in the East Valley?
Well, imagine this. Got 135 students.
Yeah.
Four teachers, one giant classroom.
What?
Yeah. it's all done in the name of team teaching.
Uh-huh.
Now, team teaching has been around a long time. I was principal of a school that had team teaching. Basically, schools were built at that time where they could open up the walls between the classrooms. The idea of team teaching was established around 1954. Now we're revisiting it. And when it was first established, it was given a reason that would improve curriculum and learning. In the case of Mesa, It's really about shortage of teachers mm-hmm. and being able to find adequate space. And you know, there's high teacher turnover. You know, so they're looking for teachers. They're able to economize on the number of teachers they use. And we don't know. The university, ASU, is involved in studying it. In my opinion, it's been overstudied. It's been tested.
And what have the testing and the studies, what have they shown?
Mixed results.
A student who is involved taking classes in that kind of group setting, do they get a better education? Or are you saying that some reports have shown yes, some have shown no?
That would be exactly right. And I'll give you my own personal experience.
Please do.
And that was that team teaching, as I experienced it, mm-hmm. was sometimes turn teaching.
Yeah.
One teacher taught, the other one took a break.
Oh.
Physically in the room.
Okay.
But turn teaching. And sometimes the teaching experience, the learning environment looked like chaos, because when you put that many kids in a room, no matter how well organized you are, no matter how well your intentions, instructionally, it can be problematic. So I'm not a big fan.
Well, what kind of classes are typically done that way? When you say this gives one teacher a break, I mean, are these just big classes that...
I'm being somewhat facetious, yeah, but not completely. It's the idea that if you put two teachers in a classroom or four teachers in a classroom, maybe you have two people who are very active in the room, mm-hmm. or maybe one is just sort of allowing the other to take over. And so maybe you're not getting 100% from each teacher.
All right. We had, let's see, I think during your last appearance, there were some comments about these required civics lessons.
Yeah.
Do you want to address that briefly? Because I've got about 1 minute.
The legislature passed a requirement that a civics test be given,
yes,
to students before they graduate.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple comments after the show,
mm-hmm.
saying, is that a good idea? Because we didn't really explore it that much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a bad idea, but I think here's a better idea.
Okay.
Go back to requiring a civics class.
Yeah. Why not?
U.S. government, civics class should be a requirement, shouldn't be an elective. You want to make the test part of the experience,
sure,
fine, but let's not do a flash in the pan test. Let's give a full year or a semester of civics class.
And while you're at it, how about adding a little more history? Let's go back to a mandatory world history and American history course. I mean, it just seems like common sense.
It does. And actually, in the civics class, you should weave through,
sure,
with American history,
yeah,
and understand,
yep,
why things are moving in this direction. We need a more educated populace.
Yes,
I mean, we
do.
Just went through an election.
Yep.
And people need to know what they're hearing, think about it, and vote with their conscience, but also vote with intelligence.
Amen. Dr. Robert Hendricks with us on The Buckmaster Show. And on behalf of Dr. Hendricks and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster saying, stick around. We've got CBS Network News. Wow, the big day on Wall Street. It's unbelievable. I think I'm looking here at the NASDAQ up 6% in one day. So it's been a huge day on Wall Street. Then, of course, Dave Ramsey talking about money at 1:04 this afternoon. Have a great afternoon, everybody.